We're going to bring y'all into our huddle.
Today's Monday, June 9th, 2014, and you are in the Warriors Huddle with me, Bram. With me, as always, my boy and producer, Scott.
Scott here.
And joining us for the second time in Huddle history, our all things video editor and out-of-town Warriors expert, Aaron. What's going on, Aaron?
What's up, fellas?
Oh, big thanks. Gentlemen, you fired up to be talking Warriors again? I know we've been kind of stuck in the finals, but that doesn't mean we can't focus our energy back on Golden State.
Oh, it's good to be back talking some Warriors, and it's going to be an exciting offseason, I think.
It's good to be relevant, you know, instead of hoping that the eighth or ninth pick in the draft is going to turn our franchise around, you know?
That is real deal. Somebody asked me the other day when the draft was, and I didn't know the date and realized that was the first time I hadn't been planning my entire offseason around the draft for what? You know, multiple years. So it is phenomenal to be here. And in fact, the Warriors are about a week away from entering the most important offseason in recent memory. So you know we got big things to talk about in the Warriors update and an offseason themed one at that. We're going to first evaluate last year's moves with 2020 hindsight and ask if we could go back in time knowing what we know now, would you still, one, sign Bogut to a three-year extension, and two, trade for Iguodala? And then, in a focus more forward-looking on how we can, in fact, improve the team, we'll first look what moves the Warriors need to make, at least what positions they need to fill to get better, and then take a look at all the players out there who we should consider in making those moves. First, quick shout-out, still brought to you by Uber. These guys aren't only our lone sponsor, they're also my favorite app. If you're looking to get a ride, you're too hammered to drive somewhere, but you don't have the money for a cab or feel like going through the drama to find it, download Uber, press a button, they'll come to you.
And when you sign up, the first time users, you can enter Warriors Huddle, no, sorry, just Huddle into the promo code, and that will save you $30 off your first ride and support the Warriors Huddle.
What happens if they type in Warriors Huddle?
That's going to result in not the $30 savings that you want to get.
So just nothing, basically nothing at all. Fair enough, man. Well, that is enough about our sponsor. Let's go ahead and jump into the Warriors update. Just like I alluded, there's a lot of things we're going to have to worry about going forward. First, let's look back. I want to take a look at the two major offseason moves they pulled last year. Here's the first one. In October of last year, Warriors signed Bogut to a three-year, $36 million extension, which had incentives that could kick the deal up to about $46 million. At the time, I was super fired up. Since then, he's gone on. He played 67 games of a possible, 89, including the seven-game playoff series against the Clip. Averaged 7 points, 10 boards, 1.8 blocks, and then got hurt and completely the Warriors in their first round series. Aaron, why don't we start with you, big man? If you could go back in time to October of last year, you knew exactly how this one was going to play out, would you tell Myers to still sign that extension with Bogut?
You know, when it happened, I was shocked, and I was kind of like, I don't know about this, and why not play it, you know, let him play it out and this and that. But I think it was a good move. And I think with the injury at the end of the year, the ribs, I mean, he's had these freak injuries, but as long as the ankle held up, I think that was the thing. If he had more ankle problems, I would say it was a bad signing. But the ankle held up, so I feel like it was a fair deal. It's not over the top price, and then you're looking at the hardest position to fill in the NBA. So I think it was a good signing.
And why? Because of the ankle and not the ribs? Just because it would be the same injury over and over again? That would kind of trip you out a little bit?
Yeah. I mean, a rib injury, I mean, you don't really have chronic rib injuries, maybe like boxers or, you know, MMA guys. But yeah, the ankle, it was the second time that it got cleaned up. And ankles, knees, and backs, right? I mean, those are the red flag things. So he held together for the most part of the season. And I don't know if it was a minute cap or if it was Jackson just not wanting to put him back in. But he held together for you know, the most part of the season, and it's not an unreasonable deal. I feel like if he's healthy, he's worth the money, obviously.
But
you know, if it's the question of is he gonna, you know, stay together?
Yeah, and I think you really hit the nail on the head when you talked about this being a hard position to fill. Bogut is one of the few really talented 7-foot big men out there who has dedicated a lot of his game to holding down and protecting the middle. There's, of the 7-footers that are out there, a lot of them don't put their body and their heart on the line as much as Bogut does. So I think that it's kind of invaluable to have a piece like that on your team.
I'm very disappointed that all of us are going to agree on this. I was hoping to watch you guys fight or at least get into a screaming match with one of you. Nonetheless, I guess I don't even have to point it out. I absolutely agree with you guys. And ironically enough, it was the Clippers series that confirmed that for me. He doesn't just set the tone defensively, doesn't just grab the most rebounds. He makes an impact on basically every single defensive possession that comes his way. He's changing shots. He's changing the way the opponents are thinking about coming into the lane or even taking those shots. And perhaps most importantly, he gives us a legitimate enforcer. We mentioned this, I think, the last time we recorded, but watching that Clipper series and watching Matt Barnes go in and take cheap shot after cheap shot against Steph and knowing that we didn't have anybody out there who was going to return those shots and make sure he had to think twice about doing it again illustrated how much we missed with Bogut. And just like you guys said, those people don't exist. There's very few seven-footers who are out there and even fewer who can make the type of non-stat-based impact that Bogut does. So is there a risk that his injury shortens his career? Absolutely. Is there a risk that his injury concerns prevent him from playing in our most important games? Again, absolutely. But I'm willing to take those risks because of what he brings to the actual floor, you know?
I agree. And I mean, you look at it like this. You look at Tim Duncan as, you know, pushing 40. And when you hear that old saying of you can't teach size. And Bogut, he has the super high IQ, and he's huge. It's not like he's athletically beating anybody at this point. You know, he's doing it with size and skill and IQ.
Yep.
And so he could play probably until his late 30s if his body allows him to and still be highly productive. And then you factor in that you just gauging from what I can tell is he actually likes basketball a lot. He's not Eric Dampier, you know. He's not there for a paycheck. He enjoys competing and playing basketball.
And so, he's not a giant bitch, unlike Eric Dampier, which really gives him an advantage.
Exactly. So I think there's a good chance that he could have a longer career. It was kind of like like Marcus Camby. Remember Marcus Camby? It was like, oh, he's done. And in the first 5 or 6 years of his career, he kept getting hurt. And then he ended up playing for like 20 years. So, I mean, with his size and want and competitive juices, I mean, he could be productive for a long time. Like, so what is he? He's 29 maybe. Well, who's to say at 36 he can't be doing what he's doing right now, as long as he doesn't have, you know, these freakish injuries.
Yeah, although the other side of that, it's possible given his injury history at 36 he can't walk anymore. You know, he'll be dominating a wheelchair league at some place. But to kind of dovetail what you're saying and then moving us on towards Iguodala, the other thing that shows the impact he makes for this team, look at the difference between when he left the team and when David Lee left the team. David Lee is a stat guy, not an impact guy. When he went down when we were playing against Denver in last year's playoffs, we could replace those stats. You know, Jack started, gave us the points. Landry came in, gave us the rebounds. And all together, we kind of cobbled together enough stats to replace him. When Bogut went down, you know, sure, you can replace 10 rebounds, you know, 2 blocks and 7 points, but you could not replace the impact he made on the other side. And there's not going to be any free agent signing that you could go after to get to make that up. So, yeah, I'm glad we ultimately have him on the team. All right, here's the next big move, and this one I bet you we will ultimately disagree on. The second large offseason acquisition during last year was Iguodala. As you guys know, it was what, right before the season, the Warriors brought in Andre. He's now on a 4-year, $48 million deal. And what they did is they traded out about $24 million of dead cap space. It was Richard Jefferson, $11 million, Andres Biedrins, $9 million, and Brandon Rush, $4 million. And they also coughed up a series of first-round picks. They gave up 2014 and 2017 and also gave up second-round picks in 2016 and 2017. They brought this guy in. As a result, we don't have a whole lot of pieces to offer right now for people like Kevin Love, but we did bring in Iguodala, who was just named to the first All-NBA defensive team. He averaged 9 points, 1.5 steals, 4 boards, 4 assists, and shot only 65% from the free throw line. Scotty, start us off. If you could go back, would you still make the trade?
Absolutely not. Iguodala was, I think, a bad pickup. He had his worst season since his rookie season. He did pretty much everything the Warriors brought him in here not to do, which was he turned the ball over. He was taking spot-up jump shots. Meanwhile, he was not the one in charge of, you know, dribbling the ball and getting, you know, moving Steph Curry off the ball. And his defense was not very good, in my opinion. I can't believe he made the first team all-defensive team. J.J. Redick lit him up in that series. So this was, all in all, a good idea. I understand why they did it, but it just didn't end up working out for him.
Shots fired. Apparently, Scott actually hates Andre as much as he hates Clay. Now, Aaron, before you give us a retort to that, let me give Scotty a little bit of support, and it's not going to come from me. Ironically enough, it's coming from our boy Bill Simmons. And Rick, I used to be on the ESPN sidelines, and now I look like Frankenstein and work for 95.7 The Game, Bucher. Here's Rick and Bill Simmons breaking down why they thought Iguodala did not do a good job justifying the move.
But that Iguodala trade, I think that was a big reason for all the problems they had. Because first of all, they went all in on that trade. They gave up two unprotected picks. Yep. They gave up two giant expiring contracts. So they gave away basically every trade asset they had. They get Iguodala, and it also ruins Harrison Barnes.
Right.
I'm going to say that trade was a failure.
They signed him to a four-year, $48 million deal.
Right.
So you're all in. Not only did you give
up
first round picks in 2 seconds and the expiring contract, but you signed him up at a point where is he going to get better? Can you expect what's the production that you can expect from him over the next 4 years? It's more likely to tail off than it is to improve. I agree with you 100%, and that's why if they're really honest about where this season went, you made a deal and you went all in on a guy who did not deliver because he was supposed to upgrade you from what Jarrett Jack and Carl Landry gave you.
Yeah.
He was supposed to be the guy who would handle the ball and allow you to take Steph off it for the better part. It's not during the season, but at crunch time, at crucial times to be able to do that. He was supposed to be the guy who could take his guy off the dribble. And now when the defense collapsed, now you're finding either Steph or Clay on the perimeter, and you're having them shoot.
All right, there you go, man. You got a quick sense of their critiques. What do you think? Do you agree with them and Scott, or are you glad they made the move?
They make a good argument. You know, when you talk about, you know, the back end of his career, I understand that it was a move for right now. But yeah. First of all, the draft pick thing is silly because I don't think the draft picks will ever amount to being like a valuable draft pick,
right,
unprotected. But I mean, yeah, it's tough going 2-for-1. It was a right now move, and then hypothetically, it allows you to package Clay in this deal for Love and then slide him to the two.
Sure.
And I also don't blame. I don't think Iguodala had as much of an impact on Harrison Barnes' problem as Harrison Barnes' problem. It's his confidence, and maybe Iguodala rattled that, taking him out of the starting lineup. But I mean, you can't play. If it wasn't him, it would have been Draymond.
I want to get your take on whether or not we can somehow bring Harrison Barnes back. That's actually something that's really important to me. But before we get your coach's analysis on that, bottom line, knowing exactly, you know, everything you said is on the money. Same thing with Rick, Scott, and Bill. But, you know, if it's a yes or no, what do you think? Would you still do the trade?
I'd do it. I feel like I'm getting a little defensive because people are killing Iguodala so hard. I just think it was. Again, I brought up the injury, you know, and that happens to everybody. And I understand he wasn't all worldly, but he's not a stats guy. It's not, you can't look at his stat sheet and say how he impacted the game. The nuances, the chemistry with Steph, and he's a guy you can put in 1, 2, or 3 in the lineup.
I feel like
Jack and Landry, we definitely missed their toughness, and particularly like Landry getting to the line. But, you know, were those guys long-term solutions either? I mean, you know, you listen to Bucher and Simmons, and they're acting as if Landry and Jack were like 24 years
right.
old. Those guys were on one-year deals.
I have no problem with them getting rid of Jack and Landry. And the fact that, you know, bringing in Iguodala prevented us from signing them is not even a consideration. It'd be more, would we want to use these assets at getting another player like Kevin Love? Now, even with that analysis, I agree with you. Let me start why I disagree with Bill and Rick Bucher. Everything
and
they said, and well, no, because I disagree with you for different reasons. For Bill and Rick Bucher, what they're focusing on is the offensive side of the ball. And everything that they said is probably true. He came up a little bit short and didn't provide the kind of ball handling and floor spacing they were hoping that he would provide when they first signed him. But looking at Iguodala's offensive talents is like critiquing Kaepernick for not being able to tackle. We didn't bring this guy in to change our culture on the offensive side. We brought him in to change our culture on the defensive side. And he went out and got the first all-team defensive selection the Warriors have had for the last 25 years. Now, does his lack of offensive production concern me? Sure. Can it all be attributed to a injury? Maybe. We might be looking at someone on the wrong side of an athletic decline, but I'm willing to take that chance. Now, what Scott was saying isn't wrong. He did get outplayed by J.J. Redick. He did fall apart a little bit in that Clippers series and didn't have to be guarded by anybody of consequence on the Clippers roster. But I'm going to put all of that into the injury basket and hope that we get up and over it next year. Much like Bogut, it's a chance I'm willing to take. I would give the Iguodala move, what, a B-? I'm not super happy with the way that it traded out, but I wouldn't stop it from going in the future.
I think that a big point that was raised is the idea that Harrison Barnes' growth was completely stunted by Iguodala being there, and I think that's a huge thing. If I was Steve Kerr, I would move Iguodala to the bench and I would start Harrison Barnes, and I think that would be more beneficial. And then maybe I would start to say, you know what, that Iguodala deal was great because now you have an amazing six man who's completely carrying the bench unit.
And you beat me to the punch. Do you think whatever damage has been done to Harrison, is that permanent? Or if we push his ass back into the starting lineup, give him the type of boost of confidence that would come with, will he, you know, bounce back to the player we thought he was after the Spurs years?
I think he would bounce back. This is a guy who started his entire career
right. And
had an amazing rookie season, and the reward for that was getting demoted to the bench.
So if that happens, will you then certify the Iguodala trade? Let's say we get Harrison back in the fold. You happy with the move?
I'd be way more happy with it because, to me, the money and the draft picks, that wasn't really a big issue.
Yeah,
that's not really ultimately why I would or would not have done it, because I don't, like you said, I don't care about signing Jack or Landry again.
Do you agree with what he said with Harrison, man? Do you think that it's Iguodala's fault this guy fell apart? And if so, can we bring him back?
You know, I think Harrison Barnes, we have to remember that. So his rookie year, it was that playoff series with Denver where he exploded,
right.
But throughout the year, it was a modest rookie year. I mean, I don't know, maybe he was 9 or 10 points a game, and he would flash these signs of like, whoa, you know, his physical gifts. But so we went from this amazing playoff run where out of nowhere from him to coming off the bench and struggling. So it was like, it was a big contrast of what happened, but I don't blame Iguodala. I think it's Harrison's fault, but I will say this, it would take a great finesse move by Steve Kerr to pull that off, to sit down with Iguodala, you know, all world defensive player who has a legit resume in the NBA as a star player, and tell him to come off the bench for Harrison Barnes. So
yeah, but Iguodala is that exact type of character type guy where he would understand that you need to take a backseat for the betterment of the team, and he would still be getting the same amount of minutes. You would just be bringing him off the bench. And a lot of the same way, I don't know if you watched the Bad Boys documentary, but Mark Aguirre, you know, agreed to come off the bench and start Dennis Rodman because he realized it was better for the team. So I think Iguodala would absolutely be the perfect candidate for this to happen.
I think the similarities between Aguirre and Iguodala is that at this point, at this point in Iguodala's career, that point in Maguire's career, they'd already kind of established who they were. They no longer need to prove it to anybody. They're looking to win. So if you came to Iguodala and asked him to try it, I think he'd be willing to do it. The question for me is, how soft mentally is Harrison? You know, has this forever dented his ability to have confidence in himself? Will he always look back and think, well, when they first brought him in, they didn't want me to start? I mean, I guess we won't know until we see how this plays out, but it is a concern of mine. All right, I tell you what, enough looking back. I want to look forward, and here's the way to organize it. I want to do it kind of threefold. First, I want to recognize what positions you guys think we need to make this team better. Second, I got a list of the players who are supposedly available either via trade or via free agency. And then finally, third, let's throw up a couple of possible moves and see if you guys think that they would be worth trying and whether or not they'd make the team better. Let's start off with the first point. What, if anything, do you guys think the team needs? I'll go first. We've been hearing a lot about a stretch four, but that's not what I want. I want a post score. It doesn't necessarily have to be in the starting five. It could be someone to come off the bench. But when we lost Landry, we lost someone who had the ability where when our offense broke down and we needed an easy basket, we could dump it down, put their back to that basket, and get some kind of a high percentage shot. We don't have anything like that, and I feel like we need to make a move for someone like that in this offseason.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's you know, real quick story of me coaching middle school basketball, and a kid came to my team in the middle of the year, 6'4" in eighth grade, big 6'4" athletic kid, can run the floor. And I said, post him. He looked at me like I wasn't speaking English. Like who has a post game beyond Zach Randolph and Pau Gasol? I mean, it's just a dying art, basically. You don't see it. You know, I will say the kid Randall at Kentucky does, but
yeah. Well, presumably we won't be looking to your kids on your junior high team. You know, I mean, there's got to be some post guys out there, and I mean, I will give you a list of people, but that's fair. You're right. That is a dwindling art and not something that's out there anymore.
They don't teach it anymore. They want to face up and shoot ball and have a first step.
So. Well, I blame you as the coach, Aaron. I mean, get there and teach that kid some post game, man. I mean, Jesus.
The game's changing. Everybody's got, you know, if a kid's 6'6" and he's 14, they're like, you better shoot that corner three, face up, and run the floor. You know, so it is what it is. But, you know, I mean, obviously, who wouldn't want a post player? You know, who doesn't want a guy that they can throw into?
I don't want a post player. Not for this Warriors team. I think that's going to bog down their offense. And really, I think I want the stretch four. I want some guy who can run the pick and pop with Curry and actually make a jump shot. It doesn't have to be a three. That would be desired. But he just a top of the key jump shot. David Lee just can't do it.
I don't think they're mutually exclusive. Look at the guy everyone's talking about. Kevin Love has a back to the basket game, and he can shoot for three. You know, I mean, it's not, and he wouldn't bog us down if we put him down there. He'd be able to provide on both fronts. But fair enough. We got post score, stretch four. What do you think, Aaron? What other skill do we need to improve on?
What I really want is the third guard. The third. You know, Jordan Crawford was brought in that mold, and he's too erratic. And yeah. Steve Blake to me was the biggest disappointment of pretty much any Warrior, even though it was a small sample thing. I mean, he gave us nothing.
What happened to him in the playoffs? I mean, he completely disappeared.
I don't know. I think his elbow, you know, to be fair, he had an elbow injury when we got him, and his shot, it just was never there.
Yeah.
But I want a third guy. You got Deion Waiters floating out there, but I think he's cut from the same cloth of J.R. Smith. I've read just weird things about that dude. And the guy I like is the kid out of Oklahoma State. Now, I know he had a run-in with the fan in this, but we need that bulldog bully third guard who's physical and wants to get to the rim and has size.
And can handle pressure and can handle contact at it. I completely agree with that.
Jack made just enough shots so you didn't hate him, you know?
Yep.
But we need that third. I think that third guard goes a long way. And you know, if you're going back to the Iguodala situation, if you brought him off the bench, he could be that guy, presumably. Is just, can Barnes be a steady starter?
Sure.
So let me throw out a controversial name, potentially. Lance Stevenson is out there.
I think you have to pay him too much. All right, hold on. Let me piggyback that. Let me give you a bunch of other names, and let's chase down Lance and some other possibilities. In addition to Lance, who is a unrestricted free agent, right? I mean, okay. So Lance is an unrestricted free agent. Here's a rest of a series of names of people who are supposedly available either via free agency or trade. Just to keep in the realm of guards who could come off the bench, Avery Bradley, someone I've got some interest in. Here's some other people: Greg Monroe, Pau Gasol, Carmelo, Isaiah Thomas, Kevin Love, Al Horford, Paul Millsap, Brooke Lopez, Aaron Aflalo, Ryan Anderson. They are supposedly out there. I also have something I want to talk to you guys about Kevin Love, but before we do, let's chase down Scott's idea, Lance Stevenson. Or Stevenson, would you do that, Scotty? What kind of contract would you be willing to give him, and would you bring his crazy ass in to Golden State?
Well, anytime you have Larry Bird saying that he wants to keep somebody there, I think to me that is saying a lot. Now, Larry's the type of dude who also might throw that out there just to get other teams interested, and then they'll pay Lance enough that Larry can get Lance to walk away. So maybe it's not to be trusted, but I mean, if Larry Bird is vouching for this guy, then I want him on my team.
I'd have two things I wouldn't want for Lance, and before we even get to the money. One is we don't have the commune influence that Larry Bird is for the Pacers. If we still had Mark Jackson here, I would really consider it. I think you'd need that kind of an almost fatherly figure behind the scenes to kind of control him. But two, presumably Lance is going to the bench. And his crazy ass, I don't feel like that would go real well if he came here and was used to getting, you know, 35 minutes and then was only putting up 28, something like that, and had to go through the growing pains. I think he'd be more of a problem than he would be a solution. What do you think, Aaron?
Yeah, I'm not touching Lance Stevenson.
Why?
I mean, partly because of how good our locker room is and how good, you know, it's like you say, well, you could bring one bad guy into a locker room of good guys. But I mean, I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't play with it. I don't think he's that great of a talent to risk it. And then combined with how much you would have, he's going to get $8-9 million a year like at least. So you're looking at moving Harrison or perhaps Lee, and then you get somebody else back, take a bad contract in George Hill, or I just wouldn't do it. You're exactly right. He fits the mold. He's that third physical guard. And it seems like these guys, they tend to have a screw loose. You look at Waiters, you look at him, you look at J.R. Smith, those alpha male third guards, you don't want them starting for you because they won't follow your system.
Sure.
So you want to play them sporadically, but then they're a loose cannon.
And there's much of a chance of them taking 40 shots as there is with them randomly blowing in somebody's ear for no reason at all. So no, I'd be cool on them. Before I give you another suggested move, let me ask both of you a quick question. Scott and I had the pleasure of talking to somebody who knows things. And what he told us was that what he said was that Steph, in addition to being a really good player, is a very smart player. And he recognizes what Klay Thompson does for his game. He stretches the floor. He guards people that Steph otherwise wouldn't be able to do. All in all, he kind of completes them as the backcourt. Because of that understanding, what this guy said is that if Klay got traded, even for somebody like Kevin Love, that Steph may never forgive the franchise. Let's assume that's true. It's a big if. But if that is true, would you guys still include Klay in a trade? Would you chance it?
I'm in the boat of I wouldn't include Klay in the first place, you know, and I know that's kind of the typical overvaluing your player type of thing that the Warrior fans have fell victim to in the past. But I just don't think Kevin Love is a tier one star. I think he's a tier two guy. He's you know what I mean? He's an all-star caliber player, and that's exactly what Klay is becoming. So, when you throw him into the deal, I just have a hard time doing it. That's kind of the sticking point for me, you know. So I wouldn't do it either way. But Steph, I feel like that's just I don't know. I don't know if that's been told to somebody or what. But that doesn't seem realistic that Steph would lose it with that situation. They don't seem that close to me. But you never know. I mean, we're not around the team, but they don't seem that buddy. But Steph is. You are right. That's why giving up Klay in the first place is a problem.
I mean, I think, you know, they say that the devil that you know is better than the devil you don't know, and that's where I think where Curry's coming with that, because he's talking in the abstract of just getting rid of Klay. Meanwhile, he's not entertaining what that would be bringing in, and if it brings in Kevin Love. And I will guarantee you, after three games, he will be very happy that Klay Thompson is gone, because he will be winning basketball games and having the time of his life with Kevin Love on the team. I totally disagree that Kevin Love's not a tier one player.
Yeah, I split the difference between the two of you. I agree with Scott. I do think Kevin Love's a tier one player, just stats alone. And I don't think that tier one players ever become available via trade. So if you can take a home run swing 9 times out of 10, I'm going to take it. This happens to be the 10th time. I'm still in shock from, or, you know, that's the wrong way to put it. I still have whiplash and, you know, PTSD from when the Warriors got completely screwed and alienated Chris Webber and ended up with nothing. If this even has a 10% chance of alienating the best player we've had since the early 90s, then I don't want to take that chance. And Scott might be right. Winning tends to cure everything, but I don't want to go down that road at the risk of actually ultimately losing Steph. All right, two more moves I want to get your guys' opinion on. Here's kind of a random one. One of the names I threw out there with Pau Gasol, having looked at the Warriors' contracts as is, if they let Steve Blake walk without re-signing him, which they probably will, if they let Jordan Crawford walk, and if they find a taker for Maurice Spates, they could probably bring in Pau Gasol on a 2-year deal, somewhere around $10 million per. Bring him off the bench, have him be a post scorer, and give us that kind of oomph in the second unit that we currently don't have. Am I off on this? I feel like that'd be a good move.
You're saying that we can outright sign Paul, or are you talking?
He's unrestricted, and you got to figure the Lakers have no interest in bringing his ass back, and we would give him a legitimate shot at winning. So presumably he would take less money, and $10 million at his kind of advanced age wouldn't be terrible, you know.
No, I think that Pau, you know, he got bitter, and he's gotten bitter in LA. I don't think Pau's done, like he may appear that he's done. I think that I think D'Antoni disgusted him, and the bus situation disgusted him, and he just kind of packed it in. Kobe got, you know what I mean? Kobe got hurt, and all of a sudden he's playing with Kent Bazemore and, you know, whatever D-League remnants that they can find. So I think he has something left in the tank. At that size, with that skill, I definitely think he's an option. I don't know if that's an option. I'm not one of those guys that looks at the cap numbers and all that and sees that. But if there's a way to make it happen, that would be awesome. Obviously,
I don't know.
He has something left to offer.
I think that would be a lot like the Iguodala trade, because you're just bringing in these guys at the end of the career, and I've seen it too often with the Wizards doing a similar type of operations like that. It just never works out very well. Gasol's been injured a ton, and you're just bringing on a guy who, in my opinion, has no fire left. He's kind of just sulks around. You just stepped through what a bad situation he was in there, but if you got Kobe Bryant on your team who's not even getting you fired up to win, then
Kobe hasn't been there. That's the thing.
And he probably hated playing with Kobe. I mean, the only thing that you're right, it would be a win now move, and they're probably not ready to win now, and you'd lock up money that you might have to give to Klay Thompson. But we do need that scoring off the bench, and I think Aaron's right. You revive this guy's career, he's got another couple of 2010, maybe not 2010, he's got another couple of pseudo-elite seasons in him. What other moves? If you guys have other people you'd like to see him bring in?
I'd like to see him go after Ryan Anderson, because that's my stretch four guy right there. And he's an unrestricted free agent, and he's coming off of a back surgery, which is not a good sign, but I think that's why you're going to be able to get him on the cheap, and he's going to be a guy who, you know, a couple years ago was averaging 16 points, or I think around 6 rebounds and 2.5 threes a game.
And so, he's a local guy, too. He's coming from Cal, where he was actually not that good. He's been a much better pro. Would you start him, or you signing him to come off the bench?
I'd bring him off the bench. Yeah, I like this Warriors core. I mean, yeah. I really think you're just looking at little pieces to add to really fill out the bench, because that's where a huge need is right now.
Talk to me about this one, Aaron, because Ryan Anderson seems really sexy to me. He was one of the names I've heard thrown around that I like. He does stretch the floor. He does give us a score. I don't know about the money. I don't know if he's willing to take a big step back, but let's assume for the purpose of this conversation, they could afford him. Would you add him? Do you like him?
Well, you know, I mean, obviously, yeah, he's an elite shooter at that size, but my thing is the defensive. You have to understand, I grew up on Run TMC and then the Weber fiasco, and always trying to outscore teams. You know, that's been, you know, since I've known the Warriors. And so it's like, to me, it's like bringing sand to the beach. You know what I mean? You're bringing in another proficient, you know, a top level 3-point guy that's what he wants to do. If he has 5 feet of open space in front of him, he still wants to shoot the three. That's his instincts. That's what he does. And I want a defensive guy. I just feel like, you know, you say money aside, but I believe he's making over $10 million a year.
Yeah. The last contract he had was 13, 14. So, yeah, I mean, he was getting
so
good
you
money.
You can't bring him off the bench, really. I mean, unless, you know what I mean, like, I don't see how you do that. And I feel like this whole stretch thing, I think Draymond Green has worked on his shot so much that he's going to be able to play stretch four.
You don't believe that. I love what Draymond did last year, but you don't think he's going to become the type of shooter that Ryan Anderson did. I mean, he's got himself so much better.
But that's the thing is that's why I'm saying it's bringing sand to the beach, because we don't need a guy that's going to knock 5 threes down throughout the game.
Yeah.
He's just got to stretch that defense. If Draymond is playing four and he's in the corner like Bosch.
Yeah.
And the defense has to, you know, he hits it enough where you have to come out on him. You can't just pack in the paint.
Yeah.
And so my, you know, looking through these deals and these trades, I'm looking at David Lee for Amir Johnson and Landry Fields.
At least 30% of our listeners just grabbed up their phone and looked up Amir Johnson, having no idea who the hell that is. But I know who you're talking about, but go ahead. Sell it to us. Why do you like that?
Yeah. It's the opposite end of the spectrum, right? It's the least sexy name out there. But yeah. this is, you know, he's a long, athletic power forward, 6'10", and he's a pogo stick, and he's a defensive guy and a rebounder. You know, he's an athlete who's turned into a basketball player. You're not going to give him the ball and ask him to score, but he'll score in transition, and he's going to play defense.
Sure.
And I just lean towards that. I feel like you keep the Splash Brothers intact, and you know, Harrison Barnes hopefully develops or whatever moves you have to make. Our offense isn't the problem. We just want to continue to grow, and we need a backup plan for Bogut. When Bogut's limited to 25 minutes a night or he's banged up, you need another rim protector, and we just don't have that. I mean, hopefully Festus Ezeli comes back.
Yeah, Landry Fields' contract is a little bit sh-burger, but what you're saying is, I mean, we'd be getting rid of a terrible contract in D-Lee, we'd be bringing in defensive and toughness with Johnson, and then all Landry Fields can do is go up from here. I'm not going to support that move just because it seems like trading 50 cents for, I don't know, two dog turds and nothing that I would be really happy to bring in. But I can see how ultimately, if you had it in the hands of a really good coach, he could ultimately turn that around and add to the team. All right. This is, and no opinions, I just want to give you guys, or give you one last move that I did on the trade machine. They could also trade straight up Nemanja Nedovic and David Lee for Al Horford in a move that I think would make them better immediately. But something tells me these guys might be tired of listening to our hypothetical trade, so we can leave it at that. Huge fun, phenomenal work today, Aaron. We really appreciate everything you're doing, both on this audio side and in the video side. And for those of you out there, thanks for hanging out. We love it every week, and that was certainly true this week. Remember, if you want to find us on Twitter, we're at Warriors Huddle. Email is warriorshuddle@gmail.com. The website is warriorsworld.net. And if you don't mind, find us on iTunes or other iPad or other podcasting services, rather, where you can subscribe and rate us. Thanks a lot, and we'll see you guys in a couple weeks.
Good.